You can now hear Film Actually on Stitcher Radio. Stitcher allows you to listen to your favorite shows directly on your iPhone, Android, BlackBerry, or WebOS device. The latest episode is always available for you. No syncing needed, no memory wasted. Don't have Stitcher? Download it for free today at Stitcher.com.
What's the matter?
Oh, I ordered egg salad and they sent me tuna fish.
Every night they send you the wrong food and you eat it. Send it back, get what you want.
Well, they get angry if you complain. You know, that's all right. And the chef has a lot on his mind.
Like what? Curing cancer? Wait a minute. Hold the phone. I got it.
Oh, you're gonna cure cancer?
No. Tuna fish. What if you mix mayonnaise right in the can with the tuna fish? Hold it! Hold it! Wait a minute, Chuck! Take live tuna fish and feed them mayonnaise. Oh, this is good. Call Starkist.
It'll be much less terrifying if you just come to me.
This man's got nerves!
Make love in the hammock!
What?
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Film Actually, episode 83 for the 15th of April, 2012. I am David McVeigh, and I am joined by Josh Philpott. How are you, Josh?
I'm not too bad, man. It's been weird not having a week with the show, I guess.
I know,
say.
We really should apologize, shouldn't we, and say that we had an impromptu week off. It was Easter, people! Well,
sometimes it gets to that point where you're like, fuck it. I just need a week off.
Absolutely. But Josh, we have somebody else here with us. Because Richard is, as you know, jet-setting around the world right now. You know, life is hard.
Bastard,
right? So we are actually joined by the host of the Uncanny Valley, Alexis Ayala. Is that pronounced right, Alexis?
Aces, David, aces.
Yay!
Wow, right? People always butcher my name. You got it in the first try.
Fantastic. Now, for those who don't know what The Uncanny Valley is, it's a new web documentary series. Do you want to tell us a little bit about it, Alexis?
Yeah, sure. So we have a sponsor, Gameloft, who's giving us a little bit of help pushing it out. It's a documentary web series based around geek culture. So I suppose, in a nutshell, think This American Life for geeks, but
yay,
documentary filled with love,
nice,
straight at
nice
your faces.
Yeah,
also,
actually,
Kickstarter page, check it out, support us, we need money.
Fantastic.
Do it now.
We'll actually do a whole bunch of links and stuff at the end of the show, but I gotta just let people know, I actually watched your first episode, and it's really good. I really liked it.
Well, thank you, sir. We did it with absolutely no budget. Everything was with borrowed equipment and with a lot of elbow grease.
I have a little clip. Can we have a little taste? What do you reckon? Here we go. This is Alexis at work. Ready?
$172,800 seconds, or 2,880 minutes. No? How about 48 hours? A lot can happen in 48 hours. You can catch and recover from a common cold. You can get a few things dry cleaned, or get that annoying leak in your car fixed. You could even, if you so decided and had the know-how, build a world. These competitions that happen all over. A group of friends, classmates, colleagues, associates, even sometimes strangers, get together and build a world.
It's pretty cool stuff, but I just have to say that I've never had a common cold that's gone away in 48 hours.
Well, obviously you don't have the superhuman immune system that I do.
Well, there you go. So, it is really good, and you should check this out. We'll give links out at the end of the show. So, Alexis, you should be very proud. It's a really good series, and I really hope the Kickstarter works for you.
I'm going to have to go find it because I'm intrigued. I wanted to know. It's like you stopped, and I'm like, oh, what?
it is really good. My son Nicholas and I sat down and watched it, and we really enjoyed it. It's and Josh, it's all about making a computer game. You should love this.
Dude, I'm all over it.
All right, let's get on with this, though. So what is this? This is Film Actually. This is the official movie podcast of GeekActually.com. This week, we are going to review the new Hasbro game adaptation. I can't believe I said that with a straight face. Battleship.
Glory.
We're also got what we've been watching. Josh tells us about the latest from the Bargain Basement. And we deliver a brand new list of five. And this is a complicated one, people. This is the Roland Emmerich honorary list of five crap movies that go boom. All right, so...
I'm very much looking forward to this list extravaganza.
Oh, it's going to be fantastic. We will actually we'll explain a little bit more about what that list means at the end of the show. I do have here, though, I just got to throw this out really quickly. I think, I'm going to save it. I'll save it till we get a little bit closer because this is quite funny. So hold your thoughts on that one. First of all, we got to do what we've been watching. So, Josh, what have you been watching this week? And don't give us your Bargain Basement yet. We'll come back to that one.
Oh, okay. Well, I will start then with that we recently bought the box set to Nightmare on Elm Street, which, of course, I've seen all of them before. But to my horror and distaste, as I copy all my DVD collection down to nice little digital copies, I realized I didn't have them.
Wow.
Because, there was a period of time where I lived with the old flatmate that used to be on the tech show, Shane.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Shane.
And me and Shane were, people used to joke about us being in a relationship, and it kind of was like that when we broke up. Certain things got left behind, and that was one of them. So I went out and I bought that, and I watched one again, which is a fucking terrific film, may I just say.
I agree.
Going back and watching it again, it's like I never ever get tired of that film. So I've been doing that. I've been hitting the series lately, Dave. Like, I went back and did it at like half the Friday the 13th. I only got halfway through and I just ran out of energy. And that's not the first time that's happened. I think I get to the one with a soundtrack made by Alice Cooper and I'm just like, yeah, I'm going to have to stop you there.
I'm done.
Law of diminishing returns.
So I've done that, and I also have one on the burner that I am trying to track down right now, because I've always been very proud of the fact that I've watched all the Hellraisers until I found out that there's a ninth Hellraiser now. Excuse me?
I had no
Someone
idea.
Someone made this film without me knowing about it, and then I found out it was Dimensions Extreme, and I stopped panicking because at least I know it's going to be shit. not even a joke. Seriously. Dimensions Extreme, prove me wrong, but you haven't yet.
I just want to backtrack to the Nightmare on Elm Street films. I love the fact that Nightmare on Elm Street films go from really good to really garbage to kind of back to not so bad. This is, you can actually chart it like a heart monitor. It goes up and down, up and down, up and down all the way through.
That's kind of what I've always liked about it, man, because it's like the crap ones give you all the most bizarre concepts, like the ideas that you're like, I can't believe you actually tried to make that work. But some of them have a few deaths or kills or something that's kind of quirky or different, and it's always that thing amongst like fans of anything. It's like Star Wars for people. It's like, for me, it's horror series. It's when I sit down with a true horror fan, you start discussing it out, and then you start picking apart. You're like, yeah, but what about the death from this with that, and that contradicts that. It's like, this is how you build a true franchise. Is you're never going to get 100% all the time, or if you are, you're amazing, but usually you don't. You get the crap ones and you get the good ones, but you take the good with the bad and you hope at the end of it that you don't end up with a trashy mess. Unfortunately, a lot of these horror series do end up that way.
But
anyway, so I've been doing that, and I've got a couple of Bargain Basement films that I have watched, and I also started watching tonight the Danish series The Killing.
I've heard about that.
Yeah, it's we watched two episodes so far, and it's intriguing. It's very, very, very slow, very languid. I mean, you can imagine being Danish, but it's very slow and very languid. It works. It works. It's taking a while to get into, for sure.
Right.
Any particular reason why you went with the Danish version versus the American one?
Only because everyone that I've talked to just says that you can't do it. Like, you see, the big problem is that, you know,
Do you hear that?
It's very encapsulated, the series. And the Danish one is like, it's all done in the one series, and it's finished. And the American version, unfortunately, has fallen into that disgusting producer trap where they got to the end of series one and they're like, yeah, we're not revealing the killer in this series. And we're also not going to end it until the end of the next series. So now they're essentially stringing out for double the time the same series.
No, yeah. The Americans are basically saying we're not going to end it until it completely jumps the shark.
Yes. Until it completely well jumps beyond. The shark, or until they're absolutely sure that no one's watching it anymore.
That's absolutely right. And
that disgusts me. What happens?
You gotta love America. I mean,
like, dude, when they get it right, they get it right. Come on, The Wire, HBO. It can be done.
But Josh, that's because it's not TV, it's HBO.
Yes.
Alexis, what have you been watching this week?
It's mostly been television.
That's cool.
I've been watching Game of Thrones and Mad Men. I'm not going to spend too much time talking about it because everyone knows Game of Thrones and Mad Men. But what I do want to talk about is The Legend of Korra.
Ah, this is interesting. Yes, we've been meaning on trying to catch up with this.
Yeah, so have you guys watched the last Avatar?
Oh, yes.
Or Airbender, Airbender, rather.
Avatar, The Last Airbender. We are huge fans of that here.
So I'm certainly of the opinion that Avatar, The Last Airbender is one of the greatest stories told in, like, sort of fantasy in the last 20, 30 years.
Hmm.
Like
big
those
cold, but big cold, but I'll back you on that.
Those three seasons, like, they do things I haven't seen films or TV do, and like it was powerful. Powerful.
Mm. I gotta say, and the finale of Avatar actually choked me up.
And it was fucking epic.
Yeah.
Epic. They delivered. So The Legend of Korra takes place 70 years later. It's, you know, the next big series, so to speak. And I am baffled at the balls they have, because they changed this up pretty dramatically. But it's still, at its core, still feels very much like Avatar.
Oh, okay.
Like, the protagonist is very different. The feeling overall, like, the city that they're in, like, the types of things that they're going with, like, you know, I don't want to talk about spoiler. I mean, there's only two episodes out, which are free on iTunes, by the way. So
they're free on iTunes?
Yeah, the first two episodes are free on iTunes.
Wow, okay.
And they'll give you the high-def versions at that as well.
Oh.
Yeah, I'm downloading tonight.
Yeah, so I certainly encourage everyone to check that out. But it is, like, if you loved the first series, you owe it to yourself to watch this, because it seems to be just as good.
Okay. I've been kind of putting it off because there's that part of me that sits there and goes, I love the first one so much. Can they really come back and do it again? And
the answer is yes.
And the answer is yes. Okay, there you go. Now, I got to ask you, Josh has not watched it, and I know he hasn't watched it. And I got to say, I'm going to be honest and upfront and say that I'm not a huge Mad Men fan. And it's not because I don't like it. I just haven't watched it. I don't know why. For some reason, I just haven't. There's so much I watch. I just haven't had the time for Mad Men. But I got to tell you, Game of Thrones Season 2, what are you thinking so far?
Love it. Yeah. I mean, I haven't read the books.
No, neither have I.
But I've been speaking with a lot of friends who have read all the books, and they're always curious, like, well, can you follow what's going on? Because I understand what's going on, but I'm curious if you can, and I don't have a problem following anything. I just, again, Game of Thrones, much like The Legend of Korra, it has balls.
Mm-hmm. Big, you know, ones.
Like, it doesn't stray away, and I love the fact that it's sort of like high fantasy, and I'm not... So, you know, in geek culture, you're usually in two camps. You're either sci-fi or you're fantasy. And I'm certainly very firmly planted in the sci-fi group. But I like fantasy if it's done properly. And the fact that Game of Thrones is actually feels more like a period piece that's more like a political drama.
Mm-hmm.
And it just happens to have the fantasy element skirting on the outside. It's not front and center. Mm. It's just sort of like... just adding a little bit of flavor. It's a little English on it. And
it's actually the best written show, I think, that's come along since Deadwood. It is remarkably well written. There are scenes in it where you sit there and you just go, that should be the most boring-ass dialogue.
Yeah.
But it's so well put together and so well...
The characters are beautifully realized. You know, absolutely. They feel... You know, like,
do you know
who
could take a lesson from Game of Thrones? Is George Lucas. No, I'm serious. Hear me out
here.
Here
we go.
Hear me out here, because all the problems of the prequel trilogy, in particular Phantom Menace, were the fact they sit there and go, it's supposed to be Star Wars and we're just doing politics. And you said, and there's all this, you know, the council and the this. Game of Thrones pulls this off perfectly. They give you council meetings. They give you...
George Lucas can never do it, though.
No, that's what I'm saying. He could... He's
directing. Because he has a tin ear for dialogue.
Mm.
Mm.
You know, he can't... Even if it's beautifully written, he's never going to choose the right performance. Like, look at A New Hope versus Empire and Jedi. Empire and Jedi seemed far more fluid because he wasn't directing them.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah. And here's a thought for you.
Objectively, the dialogue's really bad.
And here's a thought for you. The fact that Han, spoilers for a film that's, what, 35 years old, the fact that Han yeah. said, she goes, I love you, and he says, I know, Lucas hated that.
Mm.
And he almost didn't let that go into the film, and Irvin Kershner kept saying, no, trust me, trust me, trust me.
You know? Which is the freaking best line ever.
Absolutely. Mm. I just want to know what your thoughts are.
And Kershner wanted to kill off Han in the third film, and Lucas is like, no, I don't want any of the principals to die. And I thought it would have been better to have him. It would have been a bittersweet ending. I thought it would have been nice.
Yeah, no, I think that would have been an interesting move. Instead, they killed Vader. Okay. Well, spoilers. Whoops, sorry.
Well, you know, I just think he wanted a very happy ending. And
that was
I
the
think
mistake.
It would have been nice to have it a little bittersweet. It's nice.
And when you consider that everybody considers Empire Strikes Back the best of the Star Wars films, which ends on a down note, which ends in a dark yep. place, and you sit there and go, that's everyone's favorite. Can you not learn something?
Mm. Yeah, it's because it's the best Star Wars film.
Absolutely. Hands down. Okay, I'm going to throw these down really quickly because I've got a few this week. Over the last 2 weeks because we didn't do a show, Nicholas and I are going back over all the Marvel films. So far, we've actually done Iron Man 1 and 2. We're priming for Avengers. So we're rewatching all the Marvel-produced superhero films on Blu-ray in order.
Very good.
In order.
Yeah, so that we're trying to get them all lined up. Now, we did skip the order a little bit because I know Incredible Hulk falls between Iron Man 1 and Iron Man 2.
Are you really going to watch The Incredible Hulk?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, man. Right.
Yeah, it's canon to the Avengers, man. You got to watch it. Ang Lee's first one. That's garbage.
It's the least relevant, though, I find.
Well, I didn't actually mind the second Hulk film, the Edward Norton one. I thought they got the flavor right this time. At least, you know, and that character is appearing, and that is canon for the Avengers. So that goes into our. Yeah. What we're not watching is we're not watching all the licensed stuff. So we're not watching the Spider-Mans or the X-Men's or anything. That's all irrelevant. We're watching all the Marvel produced. So this week we will probably polish off Incredible Hulk, and then we'll start on Thor and Captain America and get those out of the way. I also watched, or I rewatched, as the opening clip may have indicated, Night Shift, Ron Howard's second film, which was the introduction to the world of Michael Keaton, who I really enjoyed watching it again. This is a film that came out in, 1981 or something like that. And thanks to you, Josh, because you introduced me to the iTunes Bargain Basement.
Yes.
I found Night Shift for $5.99, and I went, I will buy that. Thank you very much. And
I really hope your poor wife is not struggling because of you spending like a bazillion dollars on these.
I've been very restrained. I've been very restrained, but no,
so 50, 100?
No, less than that. But I did download Body Snatchers on your recommendation. I just haven't watched it yet. I saw it years ago on VHS, but I haven't watched it again since I bought it. And we also bought Inner Space, which Nicholas watched. Finally, which he seemed to have a good time with, so that's good. I remember Inner Space back in the 80s.
That brings you back.
It does, doesn't it? The other thing I wanted to bring up very quickly, though, because I know Josh, we spoke a little bit earlier today, I watched War Horse finally, the Spielberg film. Now, I got to really preface this by saying that I am an unapologetic, unabashed Spielberg fan. I can't help myself. But I got to tell you, War Horse, actually, all the trailers left me a little cold. I just kind of went, yeah, I don't know. I finally watched it this week, and I got to say, I actually quite enjoyed it. Now, I know you didn't, Josh.
Yeah.
Yeah. Is that all we're going to get?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
That's all you're getting.
That's all I'm getting. Alexis, have you seen War Horse?
I have not.
Okay, for those who haven't...
It's for the best.
Well, I'm going to admit, the trailers looked not great.
Yeah, look,
there's a level of, you know, competency that you expect from a director like Spielberg, but, you know, my wife and I saw the trailers and we're like, yeah, we'll rent it one day.
Yeah, well, and look, I don't hold that against you at all, because as I say, the trailers were a bit cold for me as well. But the thing I really liked about the film was, I was saying to Josh, that I really liked was that Janusz Kaminski and Spielberg really know how to shoot a film. I mean, this film is gorgeous. I mean, it just looks beautiful. The battlefield stuff is amazing. And when you get what you have to get past with War Horse, and it's something the trailer doesn't project very well, is you have to get past the fact that it's a fable. And once you get past that concept where you go, okay, what we're really watching here is a modern fairy tale.
Well, you know what? Actually, I feel if they were more blatant with that, I would have been more accepting of the trailer, because I didn't know that at all.
Exactly, and I think that's when, and I did a little bit of digging and found out it's actually based on a children's book that Spielberg fell in love with and blah, blah. And so you sit and go, this is a fairy tale. And it's about this absolutely impossible situation. I mean, the fact is that it's completely implausible, everything that happens in this film. But it's charming. And by the time you get through, and all these great actors come making small roles, it's basically little vignettes of stories. So it's about the journey of this horse from beginning to end, where it all, what's kind of spoilers, but kind of comes full circle in this story. But it's all of his adventures throughout that time. And all the people.
See, I was thinking it was like Lassie, but with war and with a horse.
Not quite.
That's what I got.
It's a little bit like that at the beginning. But it actually, once we get into the war area and we actually start getting into the, I mean, there's actually a point in it where it's quite grueling, where he actually gets taken by the Germans, and the Germans are basically walking him to death.
Were they torturing the horse for looking for answers?
No, they weren't doing that. What they were doing was they were stealing horses, basically, or commandeering horses from every farm they came upon, because they're dragging heavy artillery. And so they would literally grab the horses, hook the horses up to the artillery to drag the artillery until the horses basically die, and then get new ones. You know what I mean?
Well, I want to see a movie where a horse is tortured and they're looking for American secrets. That's what I want to see.
My son actually believes that they should have had more of the horse with a machine gun, but that's...
Thank you. You had to come running in. It's like, I want to reshoot the trailer where the horse just comes jumping over a fence with a giant Gatling gun on the middle of its chest.
Go to my son's YouTube channel. He's actually done a trailer blip for War Horse, which is quite funny. Done in Lego animation. It's pretty funny.
Oh really?
So, go and have a look at that. All right. So that's kind of what I've been watching. There's other things, but I've also been watching a lot of TV as well. I'm with Alexis. There's a lot of TV to watch. And I am well hanging into Game of Thrones, probably my favorite show on television at the moment. But we do have to move on. And what we really need right now, Josh, is your bargain basement.
All right, ready when you are.
Good evening, and welcome to Josh's Bargain Basement.
The laugh, Dave. I love it. So yes, man. In the true spirit of trying to find movies that are a little bit different, or possibly something maybe outside the boundaries, I finally dug up and found a copy of Altered States.
I love that movie.
Okay, now calm down.
I've almost bought that. I've seen that in the bargain basement.
Calm down, because I've got a lot to say about this film. Now, I am not one to in any way kind of shy away from a film that is about experimentation, drug taking, sort of the concept of the inner mind, all that sort of stuff. I was in from the start the concept of a man that's basically trying to find something inside this experience, trying to find something deeper, something further. I was like, okay, this is a decent premise.
Yeah.
Then, like, in the true spirit of everything that is ridiculous drug films.
Or everything that is Ken Russell. Let's get very clear here.
Okay, all right. You could feel free to weigh in whatever you want on top of this, man, because this is not going to be pleasant. So we come up with some drug, which may as well be adrenochrome. And for people who don't know what that is, that's from Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas, which doesn't exist.
Can I just throw it here? I'm bursting at the seams, Josh. I have to just say this. William Hurt turns into a fucking monkey.
That's a good place to lead.
Spoilers.
It's early in the film.
And this is kind of my experience. So I'm into the film. The film opens up with him in a isolation tank, which is a tank where they fill it with water and they essentially put you in a suit and you basically breathe air, but basically just float. And apparently it's one of the most hallucinogenic experiences because essentially you have nothing to do except
it's a mild form of torture. Yes.
And apparently this is a very interesting experience, blah, 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 blah. And sort of as it goes through, I'm like, right, this is interesting. But then I noticed that his character just doesn't seem to really develop in any way. He just seems to be a frantic, manic addict, essentially. And I was like, okay, fine. And then they're like, okay, so there's this random drug in the middle of, like, somewhere, and essentially they use it to talk to their ancestors. And I'm like, all right, cool, so where's this going? And then he has some psychedelic trip effect, which lasts about 5 to 10 minutes too long, even for somebody that could be entirely smashed.
I think when you start seeing, going,
okay, the fun and games is over. I don't know what's happening.
I think when you start seeing the giant mushrooms taking off like rockets.
No, it's like, this is like a mixture. This is like what people that take coke must think like hallucinogens are like. Like essentially they sit down and they just thought up ridiculous ideas because I don't know what they've experienced, but that is not very normal. Anyway, we come back and he's like, I'm going to keep taking this drug, and then his skin starts bursting and the whole thing starts becoming more and more dramatic, and I'm like, number one, stop taking this shit. Like, shit pulling out of your arms and you're starting to fall apart. I think it's probably time to knock it on the head, but he doesn't, and he keeps going, and yes, Dave, he turns into a fucking monkey. And I'm afraid of spoiling this film because when it got to that point, it was mic'd down. It was like, I am done. I am over this shitty film. And then I sat down and watched to the end. And I've got to say that, like I said, I'm not fearing spoilers because no one in the world should go watch this film. And the film where I don't know, they somehow convince him to stop taking it and he has some semblance of a normal life. And their idea of showing he has a normal life is to tack a scene onto the end where he's just walking through his house and says some weird psychedelic trip out that becomes manifested in a real state. He turns into a pink, like, round, weird thing, and then his girlfriend touches him and explodes into a ball of light, and the two of them connect, and everything goes back to normal.
He turns into, do you know what he looks like? Have you ever seen the goo that they make McDonald's nuggets out of?
Oh my God, it's horrifying.
Now,
oh.
I gotta tell you, when I saw this movie at the cinema. I am old, remember? So I saw this film at the cinema, and I gotta tell you, I was early teens, oh no, actually mid teens, and I was ripped off my tits when I watched this movie. And when you watch this movie as a teenager ripped, you sit there and go, far out, man. He turned into a monkey.
That wasn't the experience for me. I was looking at it going, he's a fucking monkey. I gotta say, I'm not feeling it. Yeah, no, Dave, definitely going back on the bottom of the pile and not getting rewatched.
Oh man, I'm gonna buy it.
Just the laughed ears of just complete disbelief in what you're watching. That's the only reason I would say to get that.
There's that one trip scene in the middle where he's with the Indians and the mushrooms are all launching like rockets and his girlfriend's doing weird things. And Ken Russell is a really odd director, can I tell you? This is the man who made Women in Love and Lair of the White Worm and all sorts of other weird shit movies. And if you see a picture of him, he's dead now, unfortunately, you know, rest in peace. But if you see a picture of him, he was this wild, crazy-looking dude with this frizzy white hair who obviously had taken too many of the drugs that he's making movies about. He was never one of my favorite directors, but Altered States stands out as one of those films where you just sit there and go, dude, you're really out there. You know?
Seriously, Alexis, do yourself a favor. You're at a computer right now, and everyone that's watching this live or watching this in the podcast, please, please go check this out. Just go on IMD Ken Russell's IMDb page and just have one look at him as his main picture. That is an amazing photo.
So you see what I'm talking about, right?
All right.
So that is an intense looking man.
So he was pretty wild. So that's fantastic. And you said you had two?
No, that was it. You see what I mean? He looks like he's trying to hypnotize you.
He also did a film, Josh, if you can ever find it. I can never find it. It's disappeared into those obscure, halls of disappearing, which was a film called Gothic. I think it was actually one of his last films, actually, which was trying to tell the story, kind of loosely based on a true story of where Mary Shelley and so forth actually had that drug-induced night which inspired her to write Frankenstein. And it's this whole thing where they all run around, they take drugs and absinthe and all sorts of things and run around and get, tell horror stories to each other. And of course, this is what inspired her to write. And it's not a very good film, but it's kind of got the same sort of tone as Altered States, just, many years later.
But you're not selling me here. I just told you I would never watch that film again. So is Gothic better than Altered States? I'll call your bluff. I'll find this film and we'll come back to this.
It's got a soundtrack by Thomas Dolby.
I don't know if that's a positive thing.
I don't think so, not for a period piece. All right, Josh, let's leave the basement. Here's a new sound. There you go.
All right. Back in the basement.
Back in the basement. All right, we're going to move on to our feature film review. Oh, man, I got tears in my eyes.
Oh, it's just going to get worse.
This week we're reviewing Battleship, directed by Peter Michael Bayberg, and written by Eric Huber and John Huber, and is based on the Hasbro board game. Okay, whatever. It stars Taylor Kitsch. Now, he was better in the Mars film, let me tell you. All right, John Carter, all right? But anyway, Liam Neeson, Alexander Skarsgård, Brooklyn Decker, and Rihanna.
We'll come back to that one.
We'll come back to that.
Moving right along.
All right, now, I actually looked at the initial synopsis on IMDb and thought, boy,
good. Someone wrote a synopsis for this. Please tell me what they thought
I actually found a second synopsis further down by The Anonymous on IMDb, who I actually liked even better. And it says, based on the classic Hasbro naval combat game, Battleship is a story of an international fleet of ships who come across an alien armada whilst on a naval war games exercise. An intense battle ensues over sea, land, and air. What do the aliens known as the Regents? When at any point did they say what they were called?
Anyway, yeah, I'm like, I didn't know they were known as the Regents.
I didn't know. Anyway, what do the aliens known as the Regents want? I don't know. What do they want from the audiences? Well, I've got to say. Anyway, let's play the trailer and we'll come back to it. So here's the trailer.
H7. Hit. B6. Miss. H8. Hit. C5.
Battleship, a great game of strategy, action, and suspense.
Miss. H6.
You sank my battleship.
A game you can play anywhere. Battleship from Milton Bradley.
I'm sorry, that was the wrong trailer.
No, that was a much better trailer than I want to see that movie.
Let's try that again. Here's the actual trailer.
I'd like to welcome you all to the RIMPAC International Naval War Games.
We've got an unknown surface contact 8,000 yards.
Is this some kind of exercise?
Probably. I want to have this thing thoroughly investigated.
We'll get a team in the water right away.
Get me on it.
Don't think that's a good idea!
Got it, Chief.
Get out of there, Alex.
What the hell is that?
My dad said they come. He said we ain't alone. He said one day we'd find them. Or they'd find us.
Where's the captain?
The captain is dead, sir.
Who's next in charge?
You are.
They've created a barrier.
My radar's totally down.
We can't seem to penetrate it.
We have three destroyers still unaccounted for, so it's conceivable we do have somebody inside.
What are your orders?
going in.
I don't know about you guys, but I thought the first trailer was better.
Yeah.
All right, Alexis, tell us what you thought of Battleship.
Okay, well, first off, I know Peter Berg really wants to be Michael Bay, but he certainly had a massive hard-on for some Spielberg and J.J. Abrams massive, flares in this. Like, there was way too much lens flare going on in this movie. Mm. Like every single fucking thing had a lens flare. I'm like, really? Can we really be going into this?
That's actually much more of an Abrams thing nowadays than even a Spielberg thing.
Well,
Abrams
he sort of took it from Spielberg and he ran with it. And he made sweet love to it, and now it's had babies and it's multiplied.
Yeah, but the problem is it had babies with someone else that wasn't quite as good either, so it came out
kind of
diluted.
Run to the litter.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, no, I get you. I'm feeling that.
Mm-hmm. No, I feel that.
Yeah, so at its core, this obviously it's not a great movie by any stretch of the imagination.
That's so politically correct of you.
it ranged from being rather entertaining at points to sort of hurting my brain.
Yeah, no, I got that.
There are like, what the hell was Liam Neeson doing in this movie? He got lost and walked onto the wrong set, and he was just there.
I reckon he took it so that he could have the line, "You sank my battleship," and he was pissed.
Cut out for some reason.
And I reckon he was pissed at the end of the day. He probably watched that film saying, "Where's my line?"
Yeah, it's. I mean, there was a lot of wooden performances. I mean, you don't expect great performances from a film like this, but I've seen like Alexander Skarsgård give better performances in this was like, felt like he was talking to a wall or something. I don't know what's going on in that, but anyway,
he was playing scenes off of Taylor Kitsch. Come on.
Why did they use this IP? Why? Yeah,
that's actually the major question on everybody's mind is, why did this need to be based on a board game? There is nothing about this.
Does anyone even understand that it's based on a board game now? Like, they paid however much money for the IP. It says Hasbro at the beginning of it. But does, you know, if you take a random kid off the street and you ask him, is Battleship based on something, are they going to know?
I don't think they will. And it's funny because Peter Berg was recently in an interview and he actually admitted that the film has nothing to do with the game. Which I don't totally agree with because
inside of this movie,
which I totally agree with because there's actually one scene which we'll talk about in spoilers where you can see that that's where the homage to the game is, but it's so small and so irrelevant to the rest of this film that you sit there and go, you didn't even need that, and you could have gotten away with this. And I've got a whole bunch of logistical problems with this film, which Alexis and I have talked about a little bit already, and I want to get Josh's opinion on them. But this film has big. What is it? I walked out of the cinema and said, "This thing has got gaping big holes you could drive a truck through." You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, they should have had a disclaimer at the very beginning of it saying, you know, please, if everyone would very politely turn their brains off.
Yes, I agree with you 100%. Now, look, just on an upstroke, my mother always says you should give an upstroke with a downstroke. I think Sam, one of our fellow bloggers who we were talking to afterwards, said something really relevant, which was she said, "I wasn't bored,"
There was explosions.
There was explosions. So there,
you like things exploding.
If you want things that just go boom, yeah, okay, there's explosions. And you sit there and go, okay, it wasn't boring. It just wasn't particularly good. And that's the problem.
There were some things that were terrible about it, though. Yeah. Like the freaking character design. Like, what the hell?
Well, yeah, it was definitely Halo.
And
that's not a spoiler. That's in the trailer. We can actually see a lot of that in the trailer. So.
No, but they show with the helmets off and everything in the trailer or no?
No. But, I mean, we know that we can see their eyes and stuff. So it's not really a spoiler. Okay. We know that they're bipeds. We know that they look like the commander from Halo. You know what I mean?
Mm. Yeah, energy. Oh, yeah. There's a lot of influences in this, unfortunately, because it hurts me as a gamer. But we'll
probably far too many, in fact. But let's put it this way: if you are a fan of the Hasbro game, this ain't your movie.
Right, so. I don't know who this movie's for.
No,
I was actually surprised to walk out of the cinema and not see one person be like, "Well, you know, as a fan of the game, I don't think that was a very good adaptation."
Because the game has such deep character that you've got to get that across, you know, and heavy plotting, you know. All right, Josh, I got to hear it. I haven't heard a single opinion from you since you saw this movie.
I've been sitting here listening to both of you talk and been like, wow, you guys are a shitload nicer than I'm going to be about this film. Okay, I was bored. Okay, I was bored. There's no amount of explosions and interesting gunplay and special effects that you can throw at me which can hide a complete lack of decent story. And when I mean a complete lack, I mean I'm willing to even let things like Armageddon slide, because at least they had enough dialogue to fill out the film in between everything that was happening. Now, we've got a film where you start out, it literally is a recruiting video. Like, I actually felt like when I was sitting in the cinema and he's talking to Tyler Kitsch's, on the couch, being the drunken idiot that he is, and he goes, "No more excuses! You're going to the Navy!" And I felt literally like this man was pointing directly at me like, "Your life is a waste and you should join the Navy." And I was like, is anyone else feeling a little creeped out right now? And so we move on through the storyline of this film, and I'm not going to wreck plot points. This is not spoiler-based. But my favorite moments in this film are them being, like, invaded by these aliens. And just, like, you know, they know nothing about them. They're a bunch of, you know, people. So they just rip the mask off this thing. No idea of what might happen or the poisonous gases it might spit from its mouth. Then we flash forward. I'm only picking parts that don't spoil anything. But my favorite moment of realization in the entire film was when we've got three characters. We've got a guy, and please, listeners, understand I'm not exaggerating anything here. We have a man that doesn't have legs. We have the blonde girl who is literally the eye candy, like literally gets
Brooklyn Decker is just all boobs. That's all she is.
Yeah, that's fine. That was her role. And the incredibly overdone geek character who I all labeled as a group thing, the special team, that hit off into the mountains, with a side plot. Like, somehow you couldn't put enough explosive alien crap in the film that you had to sidetrack to some weird little side story about a man overcoming the fears of losing his legs. And I'm like, no, fuck off, okay? Separate those films out. One could be a good film, one could be a touching drama, and one could be an explosive action film. Together, they just spell shit. And that's what I got out of this film. This film was a fucking abortion.
So Josh... You enjoyed it then, right?
Yes, I had a fucking great time. I haven't laughed so hard in ages. It was all directly at the film, but
that's the problem, dude, is when you're laughing at it, not with it.
Dude, I've got to say that this is right up there with Life Force for me. Like, not as good, but it's as bizarre. Like, it's got the budget, it's got the shitty dialogue, it's got the bizarre actors. Like, apparently Tyler Kitsch was saying that he was trying to make his character as preposterous as possible. Yes.
Mission accomplished.
See it.
Yeah.
Very, very preposterous. There is enough in this film for me to put it up there with films like that. If I rewatch this film, if I reintroduce this in like 15 years' time to some young budding journalist that I meet and be like, dude, did you see Battleship? And they'd be like, no, man, why would I have watched that? I'm like, come on, man. I'm gonna sit you down. We're gonna watch Battleship.
Can I just point out
freaking minds?
Two things that I love, and these are both in the trailer, so I guess they're not spoilers. But I love the fact that Taylor Kitsch, or however you say his name, is actually this juvenile delinquent, basically, who is basically thrown into the Navy to get him out of trouble, and yet somehow ranks high enough. that he is in succession for leadership of the boat, which I love the fact that he's managed to get that high so fast. But not only that, I love the fact when he comes back and says, "Who's in charge?" and they say, "You are." And all I can think is, you're this great Navy guy who's obviously in charge. How would he not know that?
Yeah.
You go, really? Is that how it works?
What you needed to do is you needed to have one scene in the film where there's like all of the important people on the boat like get into a smaller boat to go check something out and get blown up. And then I would accept Taylor Kitsch being in charge. But it's like the fact that this dude is apparently so crap that he's got the attention of like the person at the top of the ranks looking at him and going, you're a waste of space. And this man somehow yet managed to rise up to control not only a few people, but like half the freaking boat by the looks of it.
Yeah. Yeah. He's somehow just put in charge. It's like, I want to know how you do that because I think that could be a good career path.
And yeah, I would like to bring up one other scene.
Okay.
Which is the wonderful use of the battleship piloted by 12 really old men.
Spoilers, oh my God. spoilers.
That's part of the movie. What are you talking about?
I love it. We'll come.
Now, are you aware that to fire the guns on a battleship, do you know how many people it takes?
It takes more than 12.
Apparently, and again, I'm working on conjectures, and please, people, feel free to hit me up if I'm wrong. But somebody was saying a number like 178.
No. Obviously, that's wrong. All you need is like 8 old dudes.
8 geriatrics.
And Rihanna. Speaking of Rihanna.
Oh, Rihanna. Yeah, we haven't spoken about Rihanna. Okay,
so she was in this movie.
So is this her big motion picture debut?
Yeah, she was in the movie.
I remember her. She was standing in the background. She had that blank look on her face.
And she had tattoos and she acts tough a lot.
Yeah. I gotta say though, that one, there's one like action sequence where she goes full tit towards one of the aliens. Didn't do anything, but was quite cool. Like there were a few action moments where I was like, all right, at least you got her to do something. I have to say that she is not my big problem with this film.
No. In fact, I actually think she put in a better performance than Alexander Skarsgård. Okay.
Doesn't that make you a little ill?
It does. It makes me feel a bit sick inside.
Okay, it wasn't just me.
No. I she was definitely not the problem here. She looked appropriately tough. She sounded appropriately tough. I didn't cringe every time she came on screen. I kind of cringed a little bit every time Brooklyn Decker came on screen, quite frankly.
Yeah. No, just like that whole storyline, and please understand that I am not being un-PC when I say the special team, because I'm not saying that there's problems with each one of these people, even though there might be. I'm actually just meaning that they were like covert ops, if covert ops was supposed to be funny.
Now I'm gonna say we need to rate this film on the Transformers scale.
Ooh.
Okay. So we've got 3 Transformers movies and they rate from, you know, not too bad to absolute dreck. Okay. So where does
this, Dave? Don't speak for me. 2 is much worse than 3.
Where does Battleship fall on the Transformers scale?
Mm. Alexis, you're up first.
Well, I didn't watch 3 because 2 is so bad. I decided I gave up on the franchise. So I'm going to rate it between, it's between 1 and 2. It's not, see, the second Transformers film offended me in how bad it was. This didn't really offend me how bad it was, but it wasn't nearly as good as the first Transformers film, which is saying something.
Yeah.
It's somewhere in the middle.
Okay. Josh?
I'm going to go out on a limb here and say that based on my, I've got to rebuild the scale because you put me in an awkward position. Mine goes 1, 3, 2.
Okay.
And the way that I look at it is that it's worse than 1 and 3, but not as bad as 2, because I agree with Alexis. The big problem with Transformers 2 is not the fact that it's over the top or ridiculous or anything. You and me, Dave, we can deal with stuff like that. We're used to these kind of films.
Wait till our lists come up. You know?
Exactly. We put ourselves at ends to watch these kind of films just so that we know the scale. 2, like he said, offended me. Like, there was enough in that was actually not only politically incorrect, but also just really bad form that I would say that, no. Battleship is not that bad. All of the shit that I level at this film is literally just because I look at this film and I'm like, I get what you were trying to do, but this is incoherent. And it's like, that's my problem with it. It's like, when it gets to the point where it's like a simple story is getting complex by putting too much stuff that doesn't not make sense, but just doesn't need to be there.
Yeah,
like basic 1, 2, 3 kind of story making is out the window here, and you just have stories entering and stuff like that. And then there's all sorts of technical issues, like my wonderful fiance Celine was bringing up the wonderfulness of how sound waves, apparently, because they're sending a giant sound wave up into space, apparently look like lasers. And not only do they look like lasers, this is my addition to it, not only do they look like lasers, but apparently when you put 3 sound waves together in a forcible beam shape and fire them at each other, they don't disperse or explode. They actually just fly straight up in the air.
Yeah, which is a lot and, like the laser beam in the first Star Wars, you know, the 3 combining together, which doesn't really make
lasers,
a lot of sense.
Lasers, fine. Maybe there's something about lasers, but we're talking about sound waves here. Okay, so yeah, look, that's my little waterfalls gripe. Yeah, that's my waterfalls gripe from Avatar, if you remember
yeah,
that.
Yeah, I remember the waterfalls, yes.
Yeah, okay, cool.
All right, look, let's do a really quick spoiler zone. We're running a little bit long, so we'll do a really quick spoiler zone. Let's go into the spoiler. Remember, for those who don't want to hear spoilers, just the time codes will be in the show notes. You can just skip this section. It's only going to be about 5 minutes, maybe even less. We just got to get a couple things off our chest because a couple things I want to talk about. Here we go. All right, so we're in the spoiler vault, so anything we say goes at this point. Okay, so we're talking about the old guys before. So in a matter, this was actually one of the points that we were talking about after the screening, which was not only was the ship fueled. it had been there for 12 years, they spent. It was welded to the dock. They had to cut the chains off, if you remember. But it was fully armed.
Yeah.
Why would the ship have ordnance on board?
Well, I'm not sure how you kit out your naval historical things, but I keep, you know, chambered rounds, man. You never know when you might, you know, have a war on your dock and need to use a giant cannon to deal with it. I mean, like, this is an action world, Dave. I just figured that was just standard. Like, that surprisingly bothered me the least. I was staring at these people going, guys, I'm sure you are the hardest of nails, toughest sons of bitches out on the planet. And I'm sure you're all, you could tell from the acting, and I mean this without being mean, you could tell from the acting these guys probably were war vets.
And I'm cool with
that. And, you know, like, power to them. I have nothing wrong with the message of this film, which is weird considering what I was saying at the start. Like, if you want a film that shows off how kick-ass the Navy is, fine. I'm even in, as long as it's not weird. And when it's weird when 12 old dudes are running the ship and I'm going, this thing is massive. And these guys are really old.
And this, we're not talking about an automated modern ship either. We're talking about something that is, everything is manual. You gotta have the people stoking the boilers. You gotta have everybody at their stations. You gotta talk about those ships have hundreds of crew members for a reason.
And my granddad did the stories, like everybody else's granddad. And, you know, like he, you know, like everyone, he said that, you know, he lifted like 10,000 weight books on his back when he was going home from school and people used to whip his legs or whatever. No, I'm joking. But, like, old people are tough, way tougher than we probably ever will be.
Your granddad was Auschwitz.
Granddad was from Krypton.
No. Seriously, what I'm meaning by this is that no amount of awesomeness in an old man is going to make me believe that he could run an entire boiler room on his own.
No,
sorry.
No.
And I tried to let my brain go with this one, but it just kept waking up. It was
also,
like, it was on standby.
What the hell were those guys doing there? They were just hanging out on the boat.
Well, they were at the ceremony. Yeah,
did anybody love the dude up in the rigging that was just like standing there like he was Batman?
I like the fact that these guys were at the ceremony at the beginning, and it's like nobody told them to go home. Obviously.
Yeah. Oh, that's mean.
They were just hanging around. Now, the other question I had for you guys was, and this is a really fundamental. This is one of those holes I was talking about that you could drive a truck through. Why exactly couldn't the aliens see them?
Yeah, what the flying fuck?
They could see the other ships. They had no problem taking those out. Why is it? Because he says, we can't see them. He goes, they can't see us either. Why?
Yeah, there was something weird. It was like if they weren't attacking, they couldn't see them. And I got the basis to that, but I didn't quite get why it meant. It was like, they. You know what I think it was, Dave? I'm actually going to defend the film here.
Oh, my God.
Okay. I know. No. And here's my reasoning. Because I'm thinking about it on a global extinction like scale, right? And you see from that weird moment, which has no plot value or connection to anything else in the film, but when he touches that guy for a moment, you see these dudes pretty much go around and do this everywhere. They're essentially the world's worst party crashers. They come in, they land, they drink all the booze, and then they leave everything in a mess. And essentially, if you were that kind of a species where you came in and just demolished everything on a planet, technically you would be focusing on everything that was a threat first and then dealing with everything else last. And that's why I think they didn't attack anything that wasn't attacking them.
Yeah, but you'd assume that logic would set in, that this thing had big guns. Mm-hmm. It was pointing guns at them. Like, they were locked in their sights, and then mm-hmm. it just stopped firing all of a sudden. And like, you know what? We'll just forget about you. You go about your business.
And then I'm going to queue up.
I was about to say, it's like the alien then turned around and then looked back and went, where'd they go? I know they were there somewhere. And of course we have the battleship moment. So the moment of the game, which is where we conveniently activate all the tsunami warning systems, and we're actually firing blindly at the spots on the screen, which I thought they were watching going, okay, here's the game.
I wanted to clap.
I think my only problem with that entire sequence was I think that the beacons should have been called things like B-12 and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And then they could have been calling them off like the game. And that would have been funny. But I guess that would have taken it over the top just a little bit too. What am I saying? Look at the film that we're reviewing. So,
I am proud to have seen this film just so that I can say that I've seen this film. And then when people are like, should I watch it? I'll be like, no.
All right. No. Anybody got anything else to add to spoilers? Have you guys got anything else you want to burningly mention?
Spoilers. Movie's not very good.
Okay, that's good. Josh?
No, I'm done.
You're done? Let's get us out of the spoiler zone, and we can get back to the show as expected. Here we go. Welcome back, everybody. All right, now, we're running way over on this show. We've got a little bit of feedback just very quickly before we do our lists of five. These are actually kind of long, so we're not going to go through them all. In fact, we won't even go through all of them, but there's one we might have to come back to. So I'm just going to say very quickly, Emma and Frank, we have got your emails. We'll read them next week. But I want to read Graham Parker's very quickly. Came in today, and the reason why I want to read it is because he's recommending films for us. Now, he said, Dear David, Josh, and Richard. No. Dear David, Josh, and Alexis, Richard's not here. He doesn't deserve to be mentioned.
That's right. He's a psychic. He knew I was going to be here.
I would say, thanks for continually producing a great podcast that keeps me company on my boring commutes. Knowing how much you all love terrible movies, I wanted to introduce you to two that are particularly bad.
I've got a notes open right now.
Ankle Biters and Flying Virus.
Oh, just the names alone sound glorious. Right.
He says here.
Oh, sorry, guys. Sorry about that.
It's all right. He says, Ankle Biters. There are only two words needed to describe this: midget and vampires.
Oh, yeah.
He says, it plays like a student film / vanity project, but with none of the production value. It's awesome. And he has a YouTube link, which I'll put into the show notes, because he says someone has uploaded the entire film to YouTube, so you don't even have to track it down on DVD.
Oh, that's fantastic. Next one.
The next one is Flying Virus. Could also be called Bees on a Plane. With a fat Rutger Hauer as the bad guy and crap CGI. Oh, I've got to see this movie. Keep up
I've already got both of them locked in so that I don't forget them. That is fantastic.
He says, keep up the good work and congratulations to Josh on his engagement. I noticed his lovely girlfriend was promoted to lovely fiance a couple of episodes ago. Graham. PC, I never properly thanked you for the Red State preview ticket, so thanks. Graham, you're more than welcome. You won that fair and square. All right, thank you, Ed. All right, so we will come back to Emma and Frank next week. We are running a little bit long. We have to move on to our list of five because I've got to know what's on your list. And we're going to start at number five. Now, This week's list, the Roland Emmerich honorary list of five crap movies that go boom with an exclamation point even. Roland Emmerich has made an art form out of blowing things up. The films are not always intelligently written or even that well acted, but they are just good dang fun. Here are five more like them. And you can interpret this way any way you want. And Alexis, you're our guest. What's your number five?
All right. Well, I sort of took this as disaster / apocalyptic, post-apocalyptic sort of film. So that's my theme.
That sounds fair.
All right. So number five, Sweet Delicious Waterworld.
Oh, yes.
Oh, that hurt. Oh,
yeah. That's right, baby.
I'm there with you, man. I can watch Waterworld. I've got a copy on DVD. It ain't good, but it's fun. Josh, you're number five.
My number five, I'm starting with the easy ones and we'll work into the more difficult ones as we go along. But okay. I've actually added a little special something for everybody because I don't think these films get enough love just by saying their titles. So what I've not only done is I've not only picked my list of five, I've also added their taglines because the taglines of these films are as good as the films themselves. So we're starting with a nice easy one to warm you guys up, which is Armageddon,
yep,
which was Earth. It was fun while it lasted. I'm trying to get nothing but better, people. So
I got to tell you, Armageddon's a little higher on my list. So I'll come back to Mike. I'll hold comments until then. I've got a theme on mine, which is I haven't repeated the same director twice. All right, so I'm looking at these films, and because it was really easy, I started to put this list going, I'll do this one and this one and this one. I went, oh, shit, they're all Michael Bay films. No, take those off. Scratch those. I went, this one. Oh, no, they're all Roland Emmerich films. Take those off. And so it's like you sit there and you go, because, you know, there are only so many of these kinds of films, you know. So I decided that an early vow to myself had to be that no one director got more than one film. All right, so my number five is Con Air. Because here is a film where
almost blessed.
Where we not only dangle a sports car out of the plane crashing into things, we then land the bloody plane in Las Vegas, which just is lovely and loud. So
Nicolas Cage with that hair.
And Nicolas Cage had that hair, which was a special effect in itself.
That was hours of makeup, Dave. Hours of makeup.
Hours of makeup. Director for that one, by the way, Simon West. Alexis, you're number four.
All right, so this one I toyed with putting it number five or number four because I kind of think it's more legitimately bad, but The Happening by M. Night Shyamalan.
Oh, God, I just had a shudder.
Yeah. I mean, it's fun to watch only if thinking about his descent into sheer madness as a director.
Like, as a director, absolutely.
How does someone start off like such a bright star and just plummet so dramatically?
All I'm going to say about that, Alexis, is aren't you guys worried about the bees? All right, Josh, you're number four.
Well, my number four, Dave, is another fantastic film, another fantastic explosive action experience, which is The Rock.
Oh, yeah.
Now, not only have I got you The Rock, but here's the wonderful tagline. Let's get ready to rock, because it's not obvious enough by the name what's in the title.
It's so, almost as good as Titans Will Clash.
Yeah. I like it because I can just see that almost coming out of Michael Bay. Like, it may not have. I'm not putting those words in your mouth, dude. I really aren't. But it's just like, get ready to rock.
Do you know
it's
what? At this point, I'm going to say I am putting those words in his mouth because I'm sure it's what he said.
Yeah.
It just feels that way. All right. My number four, Rennie Harlan. Let's face it, the man has done some really crappy films, and I've got to put Die Hard 2 up there, which is not a great film, and it's not a very good sequel, but it definitely upped the scale on things that go boom.
Yes,
and because of that, it was kind of fun. Any film that could dare to have a guy eject out of a landed plane while it's exploding and survive, I'm in.
Yes.
All right, Alexis, you're number three.
Oh, this one's I'm a big fan of The Core by John Hill.
Oh my God, how did I forget that?
I'm kicking myself too.
Well done, man.
I'm completely kicking myself
with two fantastic actors, Aaron Eckhart and Hilary Swank.
Yeah, slumming it
in this giant what the fuck happened movie. We're gonna nuke The Core to get
the crust moving again.
Don't worry if it doesn't make any scientific sense.
Yeah.
Oh, God, I can't believe I forgot that movie. Damn.
Yeah. I literally think while watching that film, blood leaked out of one of my ears. I was trying to focus. I'm like, no, wait. Look, like, you know, we're halfway through the film and the thing's digging into the core and shit's going wrong. And I'm still like, no, wait, hang on. Hang on. I'm sorry. I don't quite get the science here.
Science. Sorry. Wait a minute. By halfway through the film, you were still looking for science. Yeah.
I couldn't let it go. I was trying. It was amazing. That's why the blood, man. I'm telling you.
Oh, that's awesome. All right. My number three is Josh's number four, five, whatever it was. It's got to be Michael Bay's Armageddon.
Yeah.
What a preposterous movie, but God, it's fun. When you've got the space shuttles flying like Star Wars ships around the debris. You know, he's sitting going, aren't we trying to be slightly scientifically accurate in any way, shape, or form?
Asteroids, everyone knows, are really pointy.
Yeah, absolutely. And I love the Russian astronaut, who obviously looks like a homeless bum, hitting things with a wrench in the space station to make them work.
Oh, dude. And what a choice for a Russian man, just saying.
Absolutely. It's a guilty pleasure. I adore Armageddon.
You're alone on that one.
I adore it. It is so stupid in every way. All right. Number two, Alexis.
No, all it's right. not. It's number three, and it's me, and you skip me again.
I just did number three. Oh, I skipped you. That's why. Oh, yeah. Dear. Okay, well, give me a number three then.
You sure? You're taking some of the weight out of it now.
Yeah, all right, I'll take
you. You guys are already up to two, so, you know.
Oh, give me a goddamn number three.
My number three is Volcano.
Oh, yeah.
You guys remember Volcano?
I do.
Tommy Lee Jones.
Oh, dude, not only Tommy Lee Jones, but the awesome tagline, "The coast is toast."
When you rhyme, that's where it's really at.
I love that there's a shot of Tommy Lee Jones standing there, and he's right next to the barricades, and the lava's coming in, and it's almost like he's defying it to pass him.
Man, there is no tougher man than Tommy Lee Jones, and it was proved to me when he basically stood up to a volcano. That's why the difference between me loving Men in Black and other people loving Men in Black, when I was watching it, I'm like, yeah, man, I know you. Like, in real life, you probably fight aliens. Like, actually.
Absolutely. It's that face. Sorry, what was that, Alexis?
I said he punches them in the face, just like the volcano.
Yes. Or, no, he doesn't even have to punch. Beautiful thing about Tommy Lee Jones, he just has to stare at it.
Yeah. All right. Stares at them and a building fell down and blocked it.
It's that cold Tommy Lee Jones stare with a absolutely expressionless. I love him.
You know what I love? It's going to sit in the back of your mind for probably a month, and then you guys are going to go dig it up and watch it. I bet you.
I watched it not so long ago, actually. I'm a sick man, Josh. I've told you that before.
Dude, I'm going to dig it up. When I thought of it, I'm like, oh my God, I'm totally doing that on a weekend.
And you have to do it as a double feature with Dante's Peak.
And I have Dante's Peak already loaded up on my computer for setting. Don't worry, I have this covered.
Volcano Fest. All right. Alexis, you're number two.
All right. Number two, I have from Dean Semler of Super Mario Brothers fame, directing Howie Long in the classic Firestorm.
Oh my God. That's dredging up the past. Oh my God.
Because you know what? Because the forest is burning down so dramatically and so fast that you can outwalk it. There's only five people in there.
Now, I'd like to point out that Dean Semler is probably one of the greatest cinematographers who's ever lived. And he decided one day that he wanted to direct films.
Yeah, not great.
And he directed that one, and he directed the Steven Seagal film The Patriot,
let's not forget Super Mario Brothers.
No, Super Mario Brothers he didn't direct.
I thought he directed it. No. Maybe I'm totally wrong.
It doesn't matter either way.
Roland Joffe directed Super Mario Brothers, but Dean Semler directed these two films, which are masterpieces. I mean, they are just so bad. I mean, you got to remember that in The Patriot, Steven Seagal is playing an ass-kicking immunologist.
I'm not sure if any, like, what was that word again?
Immunologist.
I'm not sure how many of those you know, Dave, but all of the ones I obviously know are like that.
Oh, okay, fair enough. Who saves the who saves the day with Indian mysticism and flowers? So it's a staggering film, and Firestorm's not far behind it. All right, so. Excellent choice, sir. Excellent choice.
Well, that's how we do.
Absolutely. Josh, your number two? And look, I remembered you, all right?
Okay, number two, surprisingly, is probably what most people would put at their number one, but I had a film that just trumped that just so heavily. So I picked the obvious one, not because it needs to be on the list. It has to be on the list, which is Independence Day. They only want one thing, destruction. And it was capital letters with an exclamation mark at the end of it.
Josh, it is also my number two.
Oh, nice. Good to hear.
You can't have a Roland Emmerich honorary list without a Roland Emmerich film.
and there's only really one that needs to go that high up a list.
Absolutely. But like you, I do have something else up my sleeve for number one.
Oh, dude, and you know what? It's not what I've got.
No, and I guarantee nobody's got what I've got as well. So, but yes, no, Roland Emmerich excelled himself in popcorn cinema with Independence Day. This is a film that was just moronic in every way and completely touched the box office nerve and made a fortune. And it was, of course, let's face it, an image on the poster, your byline that you just said, and an image of the White House being vaporized.
Oh, dude, and what a poster. Like, that, I would have that poster in my house if I could find it.
Absolutely.
If somebody finds it for me out there, send it to me for my birthday. I will love you so much. So,
and this is the man who cast the mold for all of these films.
Oh, dude, he reinvented the popcorn film.
He absolutely did, and unfortunately has never really lived up to that moment. But anyway, that's a story for a different time. Let's do a round of number ones. Alexis, you're number one.
Well, we said it. We just said it. Independence Day.
Oh, there you go.
I went with the obvious choice, yes. I wanted to slot him at number one because glory be unto he.
Absolutely.
It's supposed to be there, man. Like, literally, like, my one's a whole different kind of beast. And, like, I completely understand why it would be at the top of the list.
Well, I did toy with putting 2012 there instead, which I figured might have been less obvious. But, you know, 2012, it kind of hurts me to watch it as where I enjoy and how bad ID4 is and how much it revels in itself.
Yeah. Agreed.
It's shameless in the best.
Yes, exactly.
Absolutely. All right, so I need to know, Josh, what is this number one you're hiding up your sleeve?
Okay.
Time to show your cards, dude.
We're going to do this one. We're going to do this one a little bit differently, and I'm going to give you the tagline first.
All right.
This film, and people can disagree with me all they want, but essentially the concept of these huge budget brainless, that's the word here. Don't forget that word because it's important to this one. The brainless, heavy-duty, like crazy intense action films all spawned, in my opinion, from this film. And we're talking a film from 1959.
Oh, good
which
Lord.
Which has the tagline, "Unspeakable horrors from outer space paralyze the living and the dead."
All right.
We're talking about Plan 9 from Outer Space.
Oh, that is beautiful. That is beautiful.
That is a work of art, Josh.
Yeah. And not only is it a work of art, but it's just, it has everything. It has spaceships, it has guns, it has boobs, it has zombies, it has you know what? It's like someone sat down and just wrote a list of everything they thought would be cool in a film and then picked everything off. At a budget of like 50 cents.
You know how we were talking about Ken Russell being really drug fucked when he was making his movies? That's all I'm saying.
Ed Wood, man.
Ed Wood was special in every way.
Yep. He was a beautiful man that brought beautiful things to my world, and I will never forget him for it.
Absolutely.
It's like burned into my mind. There's no way I will ever forget it.
You brought a tear to my eye, Josh. I don't think I can go on. No, I'm going to go on. All right. Number one on my list has got to be, for me, one of those unsung heroes of this thing. It's the Steven Spielberg film 1941, which came out in the very early 80s, like 1980, I think it was, in fact, which was a comedy, and it was a really misguided effort of a comedy, and it wasn't even particularly funny in places, and it bombed incredibly badly at the box office, but it was so bombastic in every way. It's almost like Spielberg said, hey, let's just throw everything in the kitchen sink at the screen and see what happens. So we've got Ferris wheels being shot off their connectors and being rolling down piers and collapsing. We've got planes having dogfights down Hollywood Boulevard. We've got it's just out of its tree. Loud, brash, things going boom, things going rat-a-tat-tat, and you've got John Belushi being a fighter pilot. So it's just pretty crazy stuff, and I thought, if we're going to do a list like this, this has got to be a film that is crap that goes boom.
That is kind of the definition of crap that goes boom. Alexis, yeah. We heard your number one.
Oh, yes, he was Independence Day, yes. And that is a list. That is a complete list.
That was a list. That was a good list. I had fun with that. Thank you, guys.
Glorious, glorious list. I'm very happy to be on this episode with this list.
That was an absolutely glorious list. And I got to say thank you, Josh, for coming up with this list.
I'm going to take it to bed. I'm going to cuddle with it.
I'm gonna rewatch it and just feel the warmth out of it. There's a lot I have for this.
I'm gonna get inappropriate.
Just let me share I'm out of the room first, please. Okay. If you agree or disagree with anything that we've had to say today, you can send your email to feedback@filmactually.com or drop us a voicemail at 02-801-13167. Or if you're cheap or you live outside of the country or you just don't want to pay for anything, you can use our Skype ID of Geek Actually, all one word. We have merchandise, fan pages, Twitter handles. We've got all that crap. Just go to our website at geekactually.com. There's a follow us link. There's ads for everything. Geekactually.com is the home. That's where you'll find everything. Josh, where can we find out more about you on the internet?
Oh, places. No. RawDLC.com is a gaming website. Head over there and check it out. There's all sorts of crazy stuff happening there all the time, and you guys should all check it out.
Fantastic. And Alexis, tell us where people can find you and your wonderful stuff.
Well, I work for a site called Capsule Computers. You could find us at capsulecomputers.com. I produce their podcasts, Capsule Computers podcast, very generic name. But more importantly, The Uncanny Valley, which you could find on our website or through YouTube. You could just Google Uncanny Valley web series, or the first episode is called 48 Hours. You can support us on Kickstarter. I would really, really love it if you supported us on Kickstarter, because we need funding to do the second season, because we have no equipment. So please, 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 check it out.
I admire that honesty.
Absolutely. I think that's terrific. And we should also point out you have a Facebook fan page as well.
Oh, yes, of course.
Facebook.com/The Uncanny Valley Show. We'll get as many supporters as we can for Alexis, because this is really worth having a look at. So definitely go and check this out and throw some dollars his way to get the second season up, because it's actually really good. It's really good stuff.
Yep. Next episode's coming soon. It's The Undead, talking about the Sydney Zombie Walk and basically the love affair with zombies in popular culture.
Cool. Nice. Very nice. All right. Richard is normally on the show. He's not here. You can find him at therealbits.com. That'll do. No. He's all right. He's off in Paris. I'm just jealous. That's all. I should throw out, though, that Richard and I also do a comic book podcast called Behind the Panels. Even though he's away, somehow, miraculously, we still produce that show every week.
It's kind of creepy, really.
It is kind of creepy. We pre-recorded the holiday season, as we call it. We did 5 shows, and they're all still coming out weekly. So you can get that on the iTunes feed of Behind the Panels, or, of course, at geekactually.com. We also have a couple friends out there in cyberspace. WeekendRonan.com is the home for Real Junkies, which is a podcast like ours, but they drink tequila while they're doing it, and they're kind of fun, so go out and check them out. That's the Real Junkies, R-E-E-L, Junkies podcast. Or Charlie and Brad go over at reboundradio.com, doing some really good work with things like Movie Matchup and Good Day Sir. So check out their podcast as well at reboundradio.com. All right, that's a show. It's actually got a middle, a beginning, and an end, you know, and I think that we're going to call this a show and be done. I should point out that we did open with a clip from the film Night Shift. We are going out today with some music by Steve Jablonski, who actually wrote the score for Battleship, but I can't find the score for Battleship anywhere. So I thought, well, that's okay, because the score wasn't very good, and he also wrote the score for Transformers, which is really good, so I'm going to go out with some Transformers music. So it's in honor of Battleship.
To the eye.
Absolutely. So we'll use a bit of his music to go out with. You guys got anything to add?
No, I think I'm done.
You're done?
I'm done. Shit, yo.
All right, cool. In that case, we're going to say, oh, wait a minute. Wait a minute. You're pointing at something. What are you pointing at? Sorry. Our audience is pointing at something. Oh, I know what he's saying. He's saying, go to youtube.com/Nikki McVeigh, because then you can see that Warhorse trailer.
Oh.
So
I'm doing that right now.
And you can also catch out his Batman fan films and stuff like that. He's got some good stuff up there. All right, so go see more movies. You don't see enough movies, and all life's questions are answered in the movies, except maybe Battleship. And Josh and Alexis, I will see you guys soon. Josh, I'll see you next week. And, we should also point out very quickly, our new show is also coming out, Geek Actually News. Find that on the feed as well. Guys, it's been a blast.
It has.
Thank you very much, Alexis, for joining us.
Thanks for showing up. It's been great fun.
Thank you. I had a great time. Always happy to fill in at any time you guys need me.
Excellent. We may need you more over the next 5 weeks.
I'll be available.
All right, no problem. Guys, see you all next week. Bye-bye.